Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and this is episode number 47 on November 21st, 2019. For this episode, I recorded a bunch of demos at Cake International a couple of weeks ago to bring you the top tips and tricks from the best in our industry, and also got a couple of hellos from cake friends along the way. So whether you're still recuperating from Cake International yourself, working on your next competition entry for another cake show, or still getting client cakes out the door every day and wondering who even has time to go to cake shows in the first place, let's get this show started to educate and inspire you on your sugar arts journey. Okay, so I went to Cake International on the first weekend of November and had a blast with my cake and cookie friends. I didn't compete this year, and I've gotta say, that was nice and relaxing, especially when the major highway leading into the NEC was closed due to an accident on the Friday morning. Cake International did a fab job of extending the drop-off times, but for me, just knowing that my weird Google-led route through the residential streets of Coventry didn't include worrying about a cake entry honestly made me a lot more chill coming into the show this year. I'll compete again sometime in the future, but I have to admit I'm kind of digging taking some time off competing across the board. It also meant I could focus my time on getting podcast audio for you all. When I got into the show, I went straight back to the Renshaw Pro Theater hosted by the great Jackie Kelly all day on Friday, and she started off by doing her own demo on structure. She brought an enormous Empire State Building cake, being climbed by an adorable little sloth, and having made it from dummies, she could leave the back exposed so she could label it as to where she would have put the various internal supports if it had been a real cake that large. I've got photos of it on the show notes page in case anyone wants to follow along on her diagram as she gives you good tips on how to properly dowel a very tall cake.
So we're stacking. On the bottom, you can see 10, 8, 8, 6. This is the number of dowels I would use to support between. Now, I'm not a straw fan. I know some people use the plastic straws to put between the layers instead of dowels. I'm a wooden or plastic dowel fan. I don't think the straws always hold up, because if there's a little bit of movement, the straw can buckle and bend, whereas a dowel won't. So it's a personal choice. I always go for the dowel and not the straw. The straws aren't wrong. I've just found it in my experience. If you're going to make a cake this size, belt and braces. You want to know you're not worrying about the structure. You're just worrying about, does my sloth look good? I don't think I've ever said that before. So, 10 dowels on the bottom. And this is the information you put on the sheet that goes to the caterer. And I actually draw each level, so I number each level on the diagram that I give out. So, level 1, polystyrene base, non-edible. Make it nice and obvious. Level 2, 10 dowels, and I will draw a little picture, or if I'm on it and wide awake while I'm doing it, I'll just take a snap, take a picture, and then send them your pictures of each level so that you know exactly what's going on in each level. So 10 dowels, 8 dowels, 8 dowels, 6 dowels. I'm only doing 6 because I know the top is lighter. I want 8 to support the weight, and it's all about the weight. So each time you put in dowels, don't make your dowels line up. I know it's really hard, but put them in random patterns. If you have one dowel and then another dowel on top and a board and another dowel on top, you just put it off an inch. So one dowel in the middle and then two dowels either side on the next layer. So stagger them so that you've got a nice solid base. And one of the things that I spot when I teach beginners cutting off the dowels to the right height is that they leave a little bit, just a fraction, sticking out. And that unbalances your cake.
Jackie also talked about the importance of having a photo-ready top cake, especially for corporate or large-scale event clients.
And then the one at the top, the pretty little one, is the cutting cake. So you know that that's going to be for pictures, because I do a lot for PR and marketing companies, and they're doing product launches, and they want a nice photo. So this down here is your luscious eating cake. All of this is just your nice solid sponges. I don't mean solid as in you've got to chew your way through it. I mean a nice piece of cake. But the one at the top that gets cut for the photographs is the one you maybe put a little bit more effort in. And when I say effort, I just mean bake two sponges, maybe bake a vanilla and a chocolate, but cut them into really fine layers. So instead of just cutting them in half and leveling them and cutting them in half, maybe cut them into three or four and stagger your layers. So you go chocolate, vanilla, chocolate, vanilla, chocolate, vanilla. So when they cut into it, that everyone goes, ooh, and their mind automatically thinks, you've done that all the way down. Well, you might have, but all I would do is do the bottom chocolate, the next one vanilla, and so don't go to all the effort right the way through. So make the effort where it will pay for you as a cake decorator. Put the effort in on things that will show. This is your delicious cake. This is your super pretty surprise inside cake.
Next up was Carol McFarland from Sugar and Crumbs, makers of the Nifty Nozzles Russian Piping Tips. They've got a YouTube channel with lots of information on how to achieve various effects with the tips, but here's Carol with her basics on how to use them.
So the Russian Piping Tips are Nifty Nozzles. They're the genuine Russian Piping Tips. The gentleman in Russia, he is Alexander Lebedev. These are his nozzles, and so if they're called Nifty Nozzles, that's the real ones, okay? That means that Perfect. They're food safe. They've been actually made in Russia, not been made in China. So what I'm going to do is I always use small piping bags. Don't use the big blue ones. They're too big. You need to have control of your buttercream. You can use salted butter or unsalted. I don't recommend margarine. Don't get me onto that debate now. Buttercream is buttercream. Margarine is frosting. But you can call it buttercream if you like. I've got no problems with that. I call it buttercream with butter. You can use salted butter. You can use unsalted butter. Doesn't matter to me. I'm not eating it. You are. Choose what you like. It doesn't matter. It's whatever you're happy with. So I'm just going to do a very thin coat, pink, round the sides.
So it doesn't matter if there's some little gaps or...
No. Or yeah, don't get fussy. You know when Jackie said before, don't pay too much on all the fine detail. Nobody sees it. Only you see it. Seriously. Okay, so on to the cake. Very easy, this process. Small bag. It's all about pressure. So you're going to go onto the cake. Some of you might know my little chant that I have. So it's onto the cake, squeeze up, relax. Onto the cake, squeeze up, relax. Onto the cake, squeeze up, relax.
Come on, I can't hear you.
Feel free to join in. Onto the cake, squeeze up, relax. Dead easy. Onto the cake, squeeze up, relax. As I've said before, don't have the kitchen windows open. Your neighbours might be wondering what you're up to. Okay? This one is the May Tulip. I love this one. It's one of my favourite ones. They're all my favourites.
So how many are there in total?
Well, we actually have the design rights for 50 of them. But because the others we didn't register because they weren't worth registering.
Okay.
If I'm honest, if you're going to buy Russian piping tips, you just need a good 8 or 10.
So to the bundle is perfect.
Yeah. To be fair, a happy 6 is great. You know what? It's all about colour. Change the colour and it looks completely different.
After that, Jackie was joined on stage by Molly Robbins to demonstrate her new Creature Creator system, which you can order yourself at mollyscreaturecreator.com. Jackie and Molly had lots of hilarious banter along with great tips on airbrushing and more, so I've edited the 45-minute demo down to a 12-minute best bits for you. To follow along with some photos, be sure to check out the show notes page on eat-the-evidence.com/podcast.
So, I'm Haggis. Come meet Black Pudding.
Hey everyone, I'm Black Pudding, this is Haggis.
We're a new comedy act. So, Molly is going to teach you all about her amazing new Creature Creator, and I hear that you've got something new.
We have got something new.
Exciting.
So, I mean, we've got the Creature Creator, which has been out since April.
Tell me all about it.
It's a multi-use 3D cake mold, so it's silicone baking mold. It comes like this, there's two styles. I'm going to show you the laying style today, which is better for your four-legged characters. There's no carving. At all, and we know it takes. Like, do you know what I find the worst bit about the carving is all the throwing away? I think it's quite wasteful.
But I don't. What am I going to do if there's no offcuts?
There's a little bit, but not too much. There's enough just.
They could have a smaller head.
Yeah, little head, yeah. But it kind of domes up. You get the recipe in the user guide anyway, and you get those tutorials.
All the instructions. Right. I'm going to flick through the instructions.
Yeah. And then we actually have...
So you've got some recipes, how to use it, buttercream ganache, crumb coating, fondant covering, all two different methods, the ghost method and the bandage method. I should read this, actually, and learn what to do. Modelling shapes,
useful tools. I probably got some of these tips from you, Jackie, too.
And texturing techniques.
So I'm going to cover this, and you can see how quickly it all kind of comes together.
But how did you manage not to get the chocolate buttercream onto the white? Because that's what I always do.
I tend not to buttercream all the way down to the bottom, because when you smooth it out, it pushes it down anyway.
Clever tip.
You can ganache like them that. As well, or sometimes vanilla buttercream as a crumb coat rather than chocolate.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Nice.
Or just spray a bit of water on it and clean it off.
How many portions into one of those?
It's the same size as an 8-inch round cake.
Okay.
So I guess that really depends on, what would you say an 8-inch round feeds?
Well,
be honest.
Probably lunch and dinner for me, but allegedly other people cut it smaller.
So basically you can see you've already got your basic shape. You can turn this into so many different things. I've got unicorns, I've got reindeer, I've got mermaids. Just using this mold, you can do cats, dogs, lions, tigers, horses, anything kind of four-legged, bunnies, someone's in a guinea pig.
This is what this is. You know, you don't need to faff around and worry, oh, one leg's longer than the other. And
nah.
It's a dog cake. How many people do what I call school gate cakes? Cakes for kids at the local school.
Me.
And little birthdays.
Yeah.
This is perfect for this.
Nice.
Ones that you can bash out in an evening, you're not faffing and worrying too much, and you get a good return on the cake.
Yeah.
It's absolutely perfect for that.
And you're not throwing away money with all the wastage. Because if you were to carve this cake, Jackie, what would you start off with?
Oh, I'd have to layer up. So I'd bake a sheet cake, cut it in half, fold over. So I might bake an 8-inch, cut it into 2 8x4s.
Yeah.
Carve it up.
Pain in the neck.
And then 2 fours for the head.
Or even some people would use Rice Krispie for the head, and then you have to put a support in
that.
Yeah,
but you've ordered a cake. You haven't ordered a big bowl of Rice Krispies.
I know. And I just wanted something that was just edible, because I think the world of cake's amazing, but it's gone a little bit away from
It's gone more into prop making than
absolutely.
Making,
which is amazing. But,
she says with her large polystyrene tummy next to her.
No one needs to know that, Jackie. Just take a big bite out of it. Quite low fat polystyrene as well, I hear. Right, I'm making ears now, so I make one ear in each colour.
Oh.
And they're kind
of... it takes me hours to make ears.
I just say like a pebble shape, and then you kind of smash it all up. And then
and
black
because the paste is soft, you don't even need glue. It's fresh paste.
No.
So you don't need to faff around and glue and get all sticky.
It's ultimate, isn't it? It's so quick. It's so, so quick. I mean, let's airbrush him now.
Looking good.
Let me just go over his toes again. So let's make him nice and smooth. Again, you could, and then what I also do is with the small end of the Dresden, just go in and tuck it all in, you can make it look really neat.
Do you put a bottom on him?
A little...
A cracklet?
I do not.
Curious.
I'm going to give him another leg while we're here.
I do These are the things I wonder about up here. I wonder if anybody can answer the question. Does the big polar bear, has everybody seen the giant polar bear? Emma Jane's giant polar bear?
Has he got a bum hole?
Has he got a bum crack? This is your homework. You have to report back. You have to report back.
So Jackie, Dresden tool.
Oh,
I mean,
love it.
What else do you need in life?
So, desert island, me, Diet Coke machine fully stocked.
Yeah, or cans or glass bottles.
Oh,
glass bottles.
Oh, glass bottles. Recyclable because I'm a good girl.
Yeah. You can send messages in the
George
in a
Clooney,
bottle.
Hugh Jackman.
Oh yeah. Jason Momoa.
Oh, Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
And a Dresden tool.
Yeah. What are you gonna do with them?
Well, you can do anything with it. So the fat end is what I call the dental tool.
Oh, I like
you can
that.
Open mouths and you can scoop round. And the thin end, everybody thinks it's all about the point, but it's not all about the point. It's about that amazing spine down the back. So you draw with it, you indent and emboss with it. It's fabulous.
Is it true that these are meant to be for veining flowers, originally?
Okay, hands up who makes flowers. A lot of people say, oh, it's a flower tool. Well, it's not. It's a tool for whatever you want to do with it.
Yeah.
Turn it into a tool that works for you.
I'm doing a bit of pokey stick look with the whisker holes.
Oh, lovely. So it does go down to a point at the end, so pokey stick is always good.
So actually, maybe we could give them a little bit of fur texture.
So you're just stroking.
Oh, well, when once you've started, you've got to do it all now.
Well, no, you could just do a sort of furry bum.
Yeah.
And a little bit under one eye, maybe.
Yeah.
Like little whiskers.
Just to give us an idea of what we need. I like doing Dalmatian as well, because you only have to use black to airbrush.
Okay, I have to tell you, from baked,
yeah,
this has taken 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So any other...
You can obviously take longer, but I like to show off a little bit and do it really fast.
I'm in awe of how fast she goes. Yay. It is stunning.
See, I think that's a nice... You could do... If you did that in yellow, it could be like a Labrador. That's quite a generic dog shape. Yes. With the... No, whereas with the French Bulldog, is more of a flat face, wrinkly. So there's a few different types, really.
Like it. Have you got airbrushes? Hands up, who's got an airbrush? Now, this is the question. Hands up if you bought an airbrush and it's still in its box.
There's always someone in there.
Four,
yeah, I know.
Five, six.
Shocking. Shame on you.
Seven.
You're missing out.
Get it out, get a kid's colouring book from the pound shop.
Oh, I like that too.
And colour in the pictures.
Oh, Jackie.
And that'll give you confidence. And then do some lines, do some straight lines, do some circles, do some dots, get yourselves warmed up. It's a bit like royal icing. If you've got a pipe, you need to warm up your hand. Because if I piped straight onto my first cookie or straight onto my first cupcake, it's a hot mess. And I always just have to eat that one. So just warm yourself up.
We're on.
The rule with airbrushing,
yeah,
the further away, the wider the spray.
Yeah.
So the closer you get, the more detailed your line is.
Yeah.
So you're just going nice and wide. And
so I'm shading. I mean, you can airbrush to shade or you can airbrush to colour, can't you? So what I'm doing is I'm kind of shading the shadows first, then I'm going to go in with the spots afterwards.
So on your airbrush, there might be a dial or a button that you can move up or down. High, medium, low, let's just say that. So for covering a whole cake, believe it or not, I tend to be on medium. I never use the low because it might splatter on the low.
Yeah.
And the low is just the amount of air that's being pushed through.
Yeah.
So you want a steady flow.
And my compressor actually isn't working at a really low one. That's why it's on quite high.
Yeah. So I find the high one or the medium one is perfect. And it's all about control.
Yeah.
But if you get the kids' colouring book...
What airbrush do you use, Jackie?
I might be a little bit of an airbrush collector. I've got a few.
You've got a few.
So this is an Iowater you're using, and the brush she's using, or the gun, is a Neo, which is it's got a nice big cup at the top.
Yeah.
Some of them are very small.
It's quite nice all around with the Neo.
Yeah.
I like Harder and Steenbeck airbrush as well, which are nice for model shapes.
Lovely. Some of them have got a jar underneath. So if you're say airbrushing and you want to ombre a whole cake, the big jar of colour underneath is great. But because I go in and do exactly what Molly's doing and I'm in and about the cake, I tend to bash my cake with a jar. So I only use the jar if I'm doing like a large structure cake and I can be far away. If I want to go in and have detail, then the little cup on top.
Yeah.
So there's quite a few airbrush people here. I'm going to give a shout out to Cassie Brown.
Yeah.
Who actually sells the Iowater ones.
Oh, does she?
And she's got some fantastic ones. She's got one, and I can't remember the name of it, but you can actually do a line that's finer than a pencil with
it. Oh, I want that one.
Well, I'm hoping I'm on Santa's nice list.
Yeah, I think you might be. I think you're definitely on.
John Butler, Dinky Doodle.
Yeah.
They have a range of airbrushes.
Spectrum Flow.
Absolutely, yep. Fantastic.
And
it's
covered by a creature code.
Yeah.
So imagine this on the legs.
My legs?
Well, imagine him standing up like.
Lovely.
The only thing that we were lacking with these is something that could make them stand up. And I will admit, the legs aren't edible. They're plastic, they're food safe plastic.
But that means you can use them again and again.
It means you can put them in the dishwasher and use them again, but they're also cheap enough that if you wanted to factor them into the cost of the cake, I mean, they're like.
You can let them go.
So. Yeah, you can let them go and they can be recycled. They're actually made out of recycled plastic as well.
Oh, I like that.
Which is quite nice.
So is there just one set or is it
two? No, there's two sets. So there's a four-legged one and a two-legged one. So this would go on the four-legged.
Okay.
And the standing style would go on the two-legged. So that'd
can you make people?
Yeah, you can make standing up people. So have you seen the clown cake that I did with them? I did a clown and an elephant. So the clown was made with a two-legged.
So
a blanket.
For me to carve a dog cake, coat it, do the board, I would maybe take half a day.
Half a day, yeah.
And so far Molly's taken...
half an hour.
Half an hour.
I just think it takes the stress away. I think the thing that puts people off for sculpted cakes is the kind of intimidation factor. Yep. And I want to take that away because actually, when you can get into it, they're a lot more cost-effective and a lot more profitable.
Yes.
Sculpted cakes. And a little bit more wow as well. They're a lot more impressive for a customer or kids. Or I just tend to feel like they're the cakes that people go, that's cool, I didn't know that was a cake, and I like that.
Yeah. So I reckon you get 20, 24 portions out of dog?
I would say so. I mean, what you can do as well with the little offcut you get, because the cake bakes and it kind of domes over, then you slice it off in the tin, so it's nice and flat and level.
Nice.
And you can use that little bit of offcut to make like a cake pop mixture. You could do the legs from that.
To eat,
but also...
Or you could do cake pop.
You could make legs.
That's clever.
Just to give you a couple more portions.
So you just mix your crumbs with a little bit of frosting or buttercream.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just so easy. So that everything is edible.
Yeah.
So when I do a kid's cake, sometimes I hide things under the board. So if I'm doing a blanket like this, I might hide some Smarties underneath it.
Oh, I like that.
So when they cut the cake, you know that some of the sugar paste comes off the board, so you can hide some Smarties or those little Rolos. Although when I get those, I keep eating those.
Yeah, I can't have them in. I've eaten them. In fact, what I forgot to say about the legs is the legs are actually hollow, so you can fill them with sweets.
Oh, genius idea.
And then you've got your cake, you can slice your cake up, take it off, and then it's just loads of sweets to pour.
Little sprinkle of sweets on
there. Very fun. Or sprinkles or anything, yeah. Little bone on there, just to say we have, just to give us the full effect.
Gorgeous.
Do you like him?
So that is 37 minutes, woo! Start to finish. Blinking awesome.
Thanks, guys.
On Sunday, I finally caught up with the ever-busy Molly to get some more details about the new Creature Creator legs and her joy at the special thing she won on Saturday night.
Hi, Kim.
Hi.
It's Molly here, Molly's Creature Creator. Even though they call me Molly's Creative Creator.
Oh, yeah.
They've been creative with the name here. I'm Molly's Creature Creator, and I have legs now for my Creature Creator, so you can go online and see those on Instagram, and they are basically... food-safe plastic legs that are designed to fit with the Creature Creator mould. We've got four-legged, which is made for use with the laying-down mould. And we've got two-legged one, which is made for use with the standing mould. And it means you can make your cakes standing up. So they're going to be out next month. I think maybe even in a few weeks, because they're being manufactured as we speak. And it comes with the elephant and the clown, you know, the circus. We call it a big top tutorial. Once I've written it, because I can't bring myself. It's so long to write. Do you know what it is? It's the formatting. Like all the, we do it on PowerPoint. Weirdly,
yeah.
Poor Dean.
Because that's what the printer wants.
It's hard. Yeah, yeah. So. PDFs or whatever they are. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how it works.
Okay, cool. Anything else you want
to
say about that?
I want to say that I won the People's Choice Award at the Cake Masters Awards last night.
We love you.
Woo! But so. I want to say thank you to anybody listening that voted for me because it's a people's choice and it's the first ever award. Yeah. Oh, Kim, you're so sweet. It's the first ever award that is just based on numbers. So that's so nice. There's no politics, just numbers.
I keep telling you, you're super popular.
Ah, I feel it now, actually. And I've had such a nice time and I think I might be still drunk. So thank you very much, Kim.
Thank you.
Can we cuddle? Bye.
Oh my god, that thing you just made? That was amazing! You are so good at this! Back to the Friday demos. Next on stage with Jackie was Jacqueline Butler of Petal Suite from San Diego, showing how to make blueberries and sharing other tips for flower making.
So what I thought I would do would start with the blueberries. I have some dark colored paste and I use a Maricolor gel in royal blue and black with just a little bit of purple so that the color didn't go too gray on me. And then I also have some 30 gauge green wire here that I'm going to make the berries on. So I'm going to make two different styles of berries, but if you look at blueberries, some of them are very closed and some of them kind of have that little burst where they're open and split and open at the top. So I just want to show you real quick how to make both of those. What I'm going to do...
What paste do you use? So
this is a little bit of a mixture of Nicholas Lodge's Tylose paste. But what I found is that when I'm doing a demo, especially for a class or in this type of situation, the paste dries out really quickly. So I add usually a little bit of ready-to-make, you know, ready-made paste to it,
perfect.
Just to give it a little bit longer working time. So I'm this is the brand that I had mixed into this ahead of time. Is actually a commercial brand made by Flower Confections in Canada. So, all right. So what we're going to do is a smooth ball, nice and round. Again, these come together quickly. I'm going to flatten it just a little bit because berries aren't perfectly round. And then I'm just going to take the flat end of a wooden skewer and I'm just going to press that into the top gently. And that creates that kind of little ring in the top of the berry. And then I'm going to take you can use a toothpick, anything that has just a little bit of a point in it. And I'm just going to add a tiny little dot in the center. And that's it, folks. Everyone came for the magic. So I hope you're not disappointed, but that's just the little closed berry. It's really as simple as that. And then what I'm going to do is dip one of my wires in a little bit of sugar glue, which I have made out of Tylose and water. And I'm just going to insert the wire into the end, being careful to not poke it out the opposite side. And then what I'm going to do is I want to give this a chance to dry. And my little secret tip for this is, because we don't have a hook on this wire, I'm going to stick it in my styrofoam, but I'm going to stick it in sideways, if you all can see here like this. And then that way, the berry won't, as it's drying, won't slide down
the wire.
That's
clever, because I imagined as it was drying, the wire would just pop. Right?
Yeah, especially if you've made your berries a little bit larger. The weight won't pull them down. Okay, and then for the little...
Do you put anything on your hands to stop the paste sticking?
Well, I have a little bit of shortening, and I have a little bit of cornstarch. So it depends a little bit on if I'm sticky. I might use a little bit of cornstarch, and if my paste feels a little bit dry, then I might use a little bit of shortening. So today, I'm doing pretty well, but yes, I would always kind of gauge that a little bit.
It is very hot up here, I have
it
to
It is warm.
You, so the paste will be going...
So far, so good. I'm not sticky yet. All right, for the little berry that has the blueberry that has the burst at the top, I'm going to roll another smooth ball, pat it just a little bit. So now I'm sticky. Now that you've
changed it,
I'm going to take just a little bit of cornstarch. And now I have some fine embroidery scissors here, and all I'm going to do is just snip into the top to rough it up very shallow. And snip off the extra. And then I'm gonna take my Dresden tool, so the flat end here. And really what I'm doing is I'm gonna use the back side of it. I'm gonna push up tiny little bits of that cut center, and I'm pushing them up against my thumb to flatten it. And this is going to create that little ridge that we all recognize when we see blueberries.
It's like a little crown.
Yeah, it is like a little crown. And then I'm going to take the flat end of the wooden skewer, and I'm just going to gently press down into the middle, and that's going to kind of close the top back up again, just a little bit, and give the berry a little bit of depth. And that's
Thank
it. So I'm going to stick this one on a wire as well. A little bit of glue, poke through the back. If you happen to pop your wire out through the top, which I do sometimes, just take your wooden skewer, and gently press again here. And then I'm gonna stick it sideways in my styrofoam. And then what I wanna do is probably leave these for a good 24 hours to dry until they're solid. And then just to finish them, all I'm gonna do is, I've got a couple here. You know, blueberries have kind of that little frosted look to them. So you can either use cornstarch or you can use some white petal dust. And I like to use my fingers instead of a brush. And all I'm going to do is just take a little bit on my fingers, and then I just kind of gently touch and rub the berries.
That makes quite the difference.
Right. And then now we have kind of that little frosted look. And that's all it is. Okay? So super simple.
Do you tape the wire? I understand that's the thing in flower making.
Tape the wire.
See, I know all the lingo.
So usually what I do is if I'm making the berries and I'm going to use them as a filler between other flowers, then I will kind of group them together.
Ah.
So that they look a little bit more natural. And kind of the way that I do that is just see how they're all at varying heights. So some I've got a little bit of depth and some are sticking out a little bit higher, like this.
Yeah.
And then what I will do is tape those together. And then for me, in the States, what I use is I want to make sure the wires are covered completely with tape. And then I will attach this to either a toothpick or a wooden skewer. And then that will go into the cake.
No posy pick.
Although I have used them before. Or you could also slide this, if you covered this with tape, you could also slide it into a straw. And then put that into a cake as well. So those are all different ways.
I like it.
Yeah, different ways to do that.
Next was Sylvia Mancini giving lots of tips on making faces and creating fun expressions.
One thing that I always said, I suggest to my students, is to make the nose not too big. Because the most important side of the face are the eyes and the mouth. The nose is not so important. We have to make it because we have it, but you have not to make so big, because sometimes the people nose. Are so proud to let see that they are good in making nose, but it's so they want to make it bigger,
tiny,
to let see the technique. It's very important that the teeth don't feel all the mouth.
So not too far forward, not too big.
You have always to see two holes in the edges.
Getting expression into the face is one of the most difficult things I find. I'm okay doing a straight ahead face, but as soon as they've got to smirk or cry or look excited, mine always look a bit flat.
At the end, I mark always the edges to give the expression, to mark much more the expression.
So quite heavy dimples in the corners.
Yes. So when I have this kind of smirk, to give much more expression, I push a little bit with a finger up this side.
To lift the whole of that.
In this case, I push this side because it's the side that is. Because in this way, all the paste move a little bit up, and it's much more realistic, the expression. Okay, but make it after when you finish the eyes, because the paste go beside the eye.
Yes, so it just lifts up through the cheek towards the eye and closes down the eye. Mm-hmm. So you just want to smooth it out and open up the eye again.
Okay. The important thing to let them see are the eyebrows. It seems a stupid thing, but the way that you make the eyebrows can change completely the expression. So I use this tool, the Dresden tool. And first, I draw the first eyebrow.
And also this way, if you make a mistake, you can just rub it back in and start again. I like it.
Yes. If it's not good, I can remove and make it again, okay? If it's good, I pass two or three times. And I make the same on the other side, okay? And I smooth with the finger.
Next up was Emma Jane talking about how she made the life-size polar bear on display at the show. The interior was a wood-frame-supported carved polystyrene base covered with sugar paste fur, as she discussed with Jackie while demonstrating how she made the armor on top.
Hello, everyone. So today you've all seen the polar bear that I've made. So that is Yorick Burnison from the Philip Pullman.
Dark matter.
Dark materials. I don't even think my brain's gone numb. Dark materials.
She literally, I've stolen her from judging.
Judging. So anyway, what I'm going to show you today, did you see the armour on the bear's back? Okay, so I'm going to show you the technique that I used to make that kind of beaten black old metal. So that's what I'm going to show you today, how to do that technique on the armour.
Texturing and colouring. Two of the things that form a real basis for good sugar crafting, not just flat, boring sugar crafting. Not that there's anything wrong with flat and boring, but we don't do it. We're the opposite of flat and boring.
Exactly, opposite. Well, I looked at the picture of the bear, and obviously I read the description of the armour on the polar bear from the book when I was going to make him. So you've got to do your research when you're making a subject. because the armour is supposed to be like a black colour, a black base, with a little bit of metal shine on it, we wanted it to look like a beaten metal, like an old and beaten metal. So I was at home and I was thinking, right, how am I going to achieve that amount of beaten metal that I've got to make on the back of that life-size bear, make it easily and quickly, and get a good effect? So I was racking my brain in the house. And then I just got a little bit of black paste because I knew that black sugar paste was the basis of what I wanted to use to make this armour. And then just rolled it out and started trying a few little different techniques. So that's what I'm going to show you right now. So this is just plain black sugar paste. So I'm just softening it up and I'm just going to roll it out. So I rolled it out to about 5 mil thick when I did this technique. Okay. So the next thing we're going to do, I used a large bore tool. At home, I used a much bigger bore tool, but this is going to do the job the same way, okay? So all you're going to do, you're just going to push the end of the large end of the bore tool.
I don't actually have a huge bore tool, not a flower maker. So I use the end of my little 6-inch rolling pin, which
yes,
is rounded.
Do the same job.
And I do that.
Yeah, okay. It doesn't really matter what you use, as long as you get something to make a texture on it.
Thumbs, knuckles,
I'm just
going
to use my thumb in other areas just to get a little bit more texture and technique going on.
So you're just breaking up the surface.
Breaking up the surface. Now the other thing that I used as well, which I haven't got with me, which is down in the classrooms down there, I used one of those texture rollers. Ooh. But it's just got the little, like a ball indent on it. So it's kind of like you've got, you know, a row of balls on it. So I just went over it that again to give it that much more texture. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to turn my ball over to the smaller one, and I'm just going to do a few lighter textures just to infill that.
Oh, I'm going to join in. I'm going to take the end with a paintbrush.
Join in,
and do some tiny little ones.
So the more texture you put on the base of it, the better. Now you may, if you wanted to do some old kind of beaten textured metal, you can think of other ways of doing it without having to use a mould. So the next thing I'm going to do, I'm going to use my Dresden tool. So I'm going to use the wide end of the Dresden tool, and I'm just going to, I'll just put that there to get out of the way. I'm just going to drag the Dresden tool just around the paste. Now notice how deep I'm going into the paste, because I want to raise the surface of this paste to make it as rough and textured as I possibly can do. So I'm just going around.
Going almost right the way through the paste.
I am. And if it does break, it doesn't matter, because this paste is so soft, you can push it back together.
So how long did the polar bear take to make?
1 week.
A week?
1 week.
Of no sleep at all?
No, actually I did sleep. Oh. I was knocking off on average midnight, maybe 2 o'clock in the morning, sometimes 3 in the morning. But I did actually get a few hours of sleep before starting the next morning. So for me, that's pretty good. So the bear, normally, as you know, and I always say, I build with Rice Krispies and marshmallow, especially for showpieces when we come to the shows. And the reason being, when I travel with these big exhibits, if they were cake, they would never get you in one piece. And as Jackie knows, they built in my lounge. They either built in my conservatory or they built in my lounge. So this time it was built in my lounge. It went through the French doors at the side of the house, down the side of the house, up over the garden fence. That actually went up over the garden fence, and then round the side front of the house, and then into the back.
Now you have to explain how it gets over the garden fence, because this is the best bit.
Yes. So
she's got to give her husband a plug here.
Yeah. So my husband is a fitness instructor for the army, and he works with the Gurkhas in Brecon-Beacon, so he's on the army camp there. So we get the Gurkhas, and we get the PTIs, and we get the army military there, the personnel there to come to the house. And then they all, in their army gear, they're all there, and they lift this bear over the fence.
So there's half of them on one side of the fence, the other half on the other side. I just imagine them just throwing the polar bear over the fence. I think it would be fantastic.
So it's always a drama, you can guarantee it's always a drama. And people ask, why do I do it?
Why can't you do it?
Because we do it. Because it can be done. And
it's almost impossible to say no, because as soon as somebody plants an idea in your head, can you make a huge whatever, you immediately think, oh, can I? Oh, and your head goes to how you would make it and how exciting it is. It's not how little sleep you'll get, how much time you need to donate to the project.
What anxiety attacks you get along the way.
And then the 3 o'clock in the morning is going, this is ridiculous, as you sculpt a polar bear. But it's none of that. It's the challenge. It's like, can I do this? I could. It never occurs to you to say, oh, no thanks.
So anyway, at midnight on Wednesday, early hours of Wednesday morning, I fell asleep standing up, doing the bear's nose at midnight on early hours of Wednesday morning. So that was Wednesday morning.
So the little indent on his forehead is actually where my head fell forward.
So anyway, getting back to the texture. So as you can see, I have just kept on working. I've just brought this Dresden tool. Can you see this on the screen there?
Yeah, yeah? It comes up really
nice. So you can
nice
see that I've really gone to town. I've gone now to the narrow end of the Dresden tool. I've used the wide end first, now I've gone to the narrow. Now what I'm going to do with the wide end, I am just going to bring, I'm going to make like little commas.
Ooh.
So I'm just going to bring the Dresden tool and I'm just going to twist it till I made like a little comma.
Oh, so you get a wee swirl.
Yeah, a swirl. And what that's going to do, that's lifting the surface of the paste, so you've got like little bulbous bits sticking up as well. It's all adding to the texture. So this is, now bear in mind, this has been done on about 40 plates of this to go on that armour on the bear. So this has been repeated more than 40 times to get on that bear. And the bear has over 200 kilos of Rancho extra sugar paste. The black was hand mixed by my husband to make the armour, Rancho extra. And the white, obviously, we've just kneaded. And the white actually has got Rancho extra mixed. So what, two parts Rancho extra to one part Rancho white Belgian chocolate.
Oh, nice.
And the reason I used the Belgian chocolate in the paste was to yellow it just slightly, just take that white off the paste, but it gave me extra time to do the hand Dresden texturizing of his fur all over the bear's body. So the next thing we're going to do, we're going to gild it. So I'm using Rainbow Dust Luster. Jack, I've got my glasses
nice
on. What colour is that?
It is metallic gold sand.
So this is an edible luster. Now I'm just going to put that, I've put a little bit of this into my gold bowl, just a general glass bowl. And the other one that I've got, now this is the iridescent.
It's the iridescent gold fusion. And this has little shimmers of other colours in it. And it's just beautiful. You get a little bit of red, if you look at it in a different direction, it's a little bit of blue, and all with a little tinge of gold through it. The iridescent colours are phenomenal.
They come in iridescent gold, iridescent green, lilac.
They're from jade as well, that's fantastic.
I've added a little bit of dipping solution into the gold dust to make a paint. So it's just made a paint with the dust. And then what I'm going to do, I'm just painting it onto the plate. So I'm just using my brush and just painting a little of the colour on there.
Yep.
I'm just going to add a little bit more dust because it's a little bit thin for me. I think I added too much solution
so
into
it.
So
it's not a watery consistency. It's almost like a double cream consistency.
Yes, because you want a little bit of thickness to it. Now I've just got a sponge and I'm just going to dip that into the solution and I'm just going to try it on my hand to make sure. Now I'm just going to work.
Oh, that's clever because it doesn't go down all the gullies you
exactly
made.
So we're putting it on the surface, but I still want to see that black showing through underneath. So I'm just going to just dab it a little bit stronger first and then I'm just going to rub lightly those gaps in between just so you've got a kind of a darker gold and a lighter gold going on in that. Put a little bit. Now this is the gold fusion. So it looks like a pearl when you actually put it in the pot because it's quite light. So I'm just going to dot now. If you have a look, what that's doing, I don't know if you can see it on screen. Can you see that it's actually lightening the gold? So it's highlighting the gold in certain areas.
So it's almost like when jewellers mix the gold and the silver together.
That's it.
And
that's
they produce, and there is a word for it, and I can't remember. And it gives this lovely mid-tone colour. So depending on which angle you looked at it, it could be gold, could be silver. It's a lovely soft pearly colour almost.
I've written on the Eat the Evidence blog and in the IC's newsletter before about how to use the sponge technique to lighten the surface of a dark paste, which lets you use chocolate fondant or modeling chocolate. So I'll post a link to that free tutorial in the show notes, as well as pictures from Emma Jane's demo and of the polar bear itself. And at the end of Friday, I zipped over to the other stage to catch the last half of Karina McGuire's demonstration of making an elephant head. So here she is with the great Rosie Cake Diva, talking about modeling chocolate, using household stuff in your cake decorating, and other helpful tips and musical interludes.
Parsnip. So roll your modeling chocolate into a parsnip shape. So I'm just going to place it down onto where it should go. I'm not worried so much about the shape, as long as I have enough modeling chocolate to actually work with. You can always add on and blend in, because the seams are very easy to blend in with modeling chocolate. So normally when I'm actually working, I use gloves. I use disposable gloves, because I find you actually get a really nice, clean finish. You wouldn't believe how much of a difference working with your hands without them and working with your hands with them is, because your fingerprints, they actually leave... they leave marks on it all the time. Okay, so I'm just going to blend in the ears to the top of the head. You can see we have this section that kind of attaches the ears to the top of the head, just with two little triangles. Now, when you're adding pieces of modeling chocolate to modeling chocolate, you want to make sure they're around the same temperature. So if this has been sitting here for a day and you're adding a piece of modeling chocolate, you're not going to get rid of that seam. So you always want to kind of heat it up. I've used hair dryers. I've used the heat in my hand. Now, silicone modeling tools are fantastic for modeling chocolate. So you can just get the, you can blend out the seams really easy just by rolling over top of it. And it just kind of heats the surface and then they're gone. It's great. So I'm just using the sides of my fingers just to make the indentations in his head. Okay, so I'm just getting the basic shape of his eyes, and just, he's got a curve around his eyes and into the temple. All right, so I've just used the silicone tool just to create two holes where I'm going to place the tusks after. Now, we've got these nice little dragées that Cake Duchess sell. And they come in, you see that?
They're different sizes.
They're all different sizes.
That's useful.
And these are the easiest eyeballs you will ever use. Okay, so we're going to move on to the texture. Actually, I'm going to start putting the eyelids on. So eyelids of animals are almost the same as people's, is that our bottom lid is underneath our top lid. So you always, when you're putting the eyelids onto your eyes, you put the bottom lid on first. The top one kind of folds over top. One thing I love about the old elephant is all the wrinkles as well. So I have a tool for that, which I love. I have a few favorite tools. Especially specific ones, not like an entire range. I like this one from that range and this one from that range. But the Cerart orange tip, this is my baby. After I teach a class, I have to make sure that this one is in my bag.
Oh, do people try to steal it?
Yeah, I don't know. You never know. So there's a few things I use for texture. One of them is this here. This is actually a special effects sponge used for makeup, special effects makeup. But I've put it in the dishwasher. You can wash it, you can dry it, everything, it's perfect. So, and it does a couple of things. I've used this all the time for everything. So if you use it very delicately, it can actually give a bit of a skin texture, okay? If you use it a little hard, it roughens it up more. And if you use it really hard and you squeeze something into it, you get fluffiness.
Wow!
Yeah.
Do you know what that looks like?
Do you want to show them?
Yeah, I do. Do you know that looks like, you know when you get fish tanks? The filters on a fish tank?
Yeah, or like an anorak, you know, the outside of an anorak or an arm fluff or whatever.
That's cool. Okay.
So I'm just adding some texture. And this is also a nice way to get rid of any seams that you might have that are still showing. You can blend them together with this as well, which is great.
But are you like me to go around the house and try and find anything that will make an impression?
Yes. I made a record player for the Christmas display, and I actually went out and searched loads of places and ended up buying a frying pan that had those circular grooves on it. So that's my record player frying pan.
You bought it
because of the grooves that came in it. Yeah. I admire your dedication. But does it fry well? Yeah, it's excellent. So that's the base texture. Now, I like to layer things up when I'm doing any piece. I like even skin texture. You start with the deep grooves, and then you work to the lighter ones, and then the light markings on top of that as well. So we get that one in. I'm just going to make all the little lines on his nose, on his trunk, not mine. So we've got all these beautiful, nice textures coming into the ears as well, but I think it's too much, so I'm just going to rub it out a little bit, and I'm going to add a bit of glow so that he's flopping his ears a bit, it's not just flat. Now, for the tusks, there's a product called Laped, L-A-P-E-D, and it's great. It's kind of like a cocoa butter-based modeling paste. It's kind of like playing with candle wax. It's really, really strange, but it's great because pure white, it can stick to your modeling chocolate, but at the same time you can remove work, stick it back on. It doesn't adhere completely, but it still attaches too, so it's great. So, but for the sake of today, I'm just going to use the modeling chocolate that isn't colored. Okay, so when I'm coloring cakes, I mostly use the dusts. I think you've got more control over what shade, how thin it is, and then you can dry dust as well using the same shades as well. So I'm going to start just painting darker shades wherever it needs to be, and then I'm going to dry dust over top of it to kind of blend it out a little bit. And the dry dusting is great because all those nooks and cracks that you've created, they start showing up even more so. So I just want to tell you about dry dusting. I'm sure most of you have done it, but if you haven't, less is more, right? So what I do is I dab my brush with it on, I rub it until it's almost off, and then that's when it's good to use. Because it's hard to take it off, but it's easy to add more, right?
They can streak, can't it?
Yeah.
If you don't make it light enough.
And it's more of a rubbing than anything. You can see it's just kind of clinging on to the higher areas of the elephant. And you always want it darker wherever a shadow might be. So in against the ears, behind his head.
Well, do you know, last year, did anyone come to the awards? Is anyone coming to the Cake Masters Awards?
Oh, yeah.
Well, a couple of years ago, I rapped, didn't I? And
yes.
You've got to see my
last
children
year as well, didn't
don't
know you did.
Do it, Mum. Do not do it. They were mortified.
I can actually.
Exactly why I did it.
My husband made a bet that I wouldn't rap on stage. So prepare yourselves. In West Philadelphia.
No, wait. Film it, quick. Someone film it. Has anyone got the camera? Get the camera out. Do we need to do? Yeah, she's running out with the camera now. Wait, now you can't stop. Don't stop. And go, Karina.
In West Philadelphia, born and raised, on the playground is where I spend most of my days. Chilling out, relaxing, maxing all the technology, all the guys, you're not too good. You're out of making trouble in my neighborhood. I got a one-room fight in my mind gets scared. She said,
you're with your auntie and Uncle Miller.
I was a forget man, but then I see him. Here, and
nobody cares, I can't stop where just keep going.
You're home to Bel Air. I pulled up to the house about 7 all right, and I yelled to the gabby, your home is smelly leader. Look at my kingdom, I was finally there. Sit on my throne, I'm the Prince of Bel-Air.
Thank you. Woo! I've no idea.
Thank you, Barry.
Will Smith has got nothing on you.
I know. Maybe he'll be found now. He's going to see
know what?
Me
maybe
and share
not.
It.
Maybe not.
Forget cakes, I'm going into rapping. So the only other thing that I see on this guy that I kind of need and forgot is he needs his wrinkles. So I have a tool that I love to use for wrinkles, which is L'Orange Tip Tool. This one's awesome. It's perfect for deep wrinkles, thin wrinkles.
Oh.
Best tool ever. Absolutely. It has a number on it. Remember that.
K2210.
2210, but it's fantastic for that tiny, fine little lines and wrinkles and details. So I'm just going to add some bags underneath his eyes here. Now wrinkles are typically, when I make a wrinkle, I make sure that the tip is actually pointed upwards because wrinkles kind of fold over and sag over, so you want to make sure that you're scooping underneath.
Well, that makes a massive difference.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
He's kind of aging.
Because he looked all smooth and it wasn't normal, but
yeah.
Now he looks... look at the difference.
Yeah,
between the two. And they're ever so fine lines, aren't they?
And I find sometimes if I'm trying to match the eye, I can't really, because I'm not left-handed. So I like to flip it upside down.
I do
that too. Perspective.
Wouldn't
as well.
It be wonderful to be ambidextrous?
And it, never do like line. You know, some lines are joined together, cracking off the edges and sides and stuff. So, and crisscrosses as well.
On Saturday, I went back to the Renshaw Pro Theatre to watch Molly Robbins back on stage, this time as host for Don Butler demonstrating airbrushing on icing sheets, partly so the audience could better see the demonstration via the overhead cameras, but also showing how you can airbrush on icing sheets and then cut them and apply them to wherever you need them.
Bottom airbrushing is what today's demo is all about, because people, whilst they might have gone, oh, I'll just do a bit of full colour around the cake, what they can't then do is that finer detail and the stenciling, and they don't know why it goes wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get our first one out. Let's take a look then at what we should be doing when we're stenciling. So most of the problem that people have when they're stenciling is that they put too much colour on, basically. Now, forget the brand of airbrush, doesn't matter what brand it is.
Kinky Doodle.
There are only... I thought you said Kinky Doodle then.
Kinky Doodle,
that's a whole different brand.
It is.
That's Dawn After Dark. It is,
you're absolutely right.
So I put some sky blue in here, and you're going to check your colour and make sure that your colour's okay.
Is this a water-based colour that you're using?
It is a water-based colour, so nice and cheap.
I like a water-based colour.
Yeah, so not necessarily expensive, which is great, that's what you kind of need.
They go quite far as well,
they do go a long, long way. So what I've done to begin with, look, is tear a piece of paper.
Ooh.
And that's going to be our first stencil. So really easily, you could be creating a little technique just by airbrushing around this paper.
Wow.
And I'm following the edge of that.
Like a sky?
And it's like a sky.
Oh, that's
but
clever.
A little bit textured.
I like how you use this paper and that's cheap.
It's, yeah, absolutely it is. Now you'll notice how blue is my piece of paper getting.
Really
like blue, isn't it?
Yeah.
But how blue is the sky?
Yeah.
It's nice and gentle.
Yeah.
So part of the mistake that people make is when they're doing it, is that they actually try and colour in on a cake.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a mess.
Yeah.
You're putting too much colour on there, basically.
Yeah.
So what we try and do when we're stenciling is we airbrush the stencil, not the project.
Yeah.
Okay?
So you're having the overspray on the
icing. Exactly. So it's the overspray that you're learning how to control and do something with it that way. And of course you can get darker, you can add more colours, but literally just by moving something along,
yeah.
We've now made a sky feature of our cake. It's taken us 2 seconds, but it looks more professional than marbling it. It's taken less time than marbling it. And we now can make more money out of our cake because we can charge more.
And that's what we like.
So we'll put our first stencil on a cake. And this one is a skyline. So
a building.
It is a building.
Ah.
But what you notice about it, Molly, is there's our building line.
Upside down.
It is upside down. So that's what you recognise as a building, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah? Now, when you think about airbrushing, it actually works a little differently. But I'm going to take a strip of this, and I'm actually...
Is that your stencil that you're doing that
with? It is. It's one of my brand new stencils. So when I do stencil sets, I do them with airbrushing in mind and give you several parts of different things.
Yeah, basically. So you can get the maximum out of it.
So that, exactly.
So you're just masking that up now.
Yeah, so I've masked off the windows.
Yeah.
And the reason being is it's now not upside down, because actually I don't want a solid building and airbrush the sky, do I?
Yeah, no.
I want to airbrush the building. So if I turn that round, I now fill in the space.
That's clever.
Now, when I'm pointing, I'm going to be pointing straight at the stencil.
Yeah.
If this was the side of a cake, I'm now going to be pointed. I won't get you, I promise. I'm now going to be pointing horizontally at it. If I point down, where might my colour go? It might blow down underneath the stencil.
Yeah.
If I point upwards, it's going to do the same thing.
Mm.
So you must be pointing directly at your stencil horizontally. So I'm pointing directly down, and I'm only spraying in a downwards motion.
So this is like, I make a lot of cakes that are like New York theme or like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And cutting out a little buildings takes forever.
It does. Let's say that I've put one row on there, that's fine. There's actually nothing stopping me now going a bit further up.
Oh, a bit
now
finer.
Now you've already put one layer of colour on, so it won't affect that one, but it now makes instantly something look like it's behind the other.
That's very clever.
But actually, really quickly, you can build up. So I'm now just putting the windows.
And is this a metallic colour that you
So use? This is a fractal shimmer colour. So
hey, that's nice.
Pearlized.
That's lovely.
It's gorgeous, isn't it?
doing windows when you're cutting them out and trying to like stick little squares on.
Stick loads of little squares on. There they are.
Hey, that's nice. Look at that. It's so much depth. Yeah, and it's just instantly, straight away,
yeah.
You've changed what it is that you're up to.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've seen how we can use paper as a stencil, dead quickly, and just do something together.
Yeah.
The other thing that is really quick and easy to use. Okay, so I'm now just going to tear some paper, and I'm tearing it into a V,
yeah.
Like so. And then I might just tear those two bits apart.
Yeah.
And... okay, what I'm going to do now is mix some colours. And I quite often mix colours in the cup. What I love about these fractals is it allows me to just put an odd drop.
So yeah, I mix in the cup.
Yeah, so that I can literally just drop her a few colours at a time.
Yeah.
So I've got half a cup of yellow and two drops of brown. Then to mix my colours, I'm just going to block the end of the airbrush. Yeah. I'm going to pull back the trigger, and then my colour is now mixed. So yeah. I've now got a kind of golden brown. I'm going to turn my project round, there we go, and take my piece of paper. Now, it's a stencil, so what am I going to airbrush? The stencil or the project?
Stencil.
I am. Oh, paying attention.
Well done.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk up the stencil, and I'm going to walk back down again. Then I'm going to move a piece of paper, and I'm going to walk up, walk back down, walk up, walk back down.
Oh, I think I know what you're
doing. Oh. When I turn it round the other way, I'm going to do exactly the same thing. Now, this pattern will change depending on how far you are away with your project.
Yeah.
So if I'm a good distance away, and I'll do it now, if I come all the way up here, my spray is going to be as wide as possible. Can you see how much the overspray goes everywhere?
Yeah.
If I now move it and come closer to the project, can you see that actually all I'm getting is a little line? So completely different, depending on how it is that you do it.
Can anyone have a guess what Dawn's doing now?
It is wood grain. Okay. You're absolutely right. So again, something as simple as a piece of torn paper, and we could be adding details to our cake really, really quickly. And I use a board for that, so that goes on my boards all the time.
What's nice as well with that wood grain is that you've gone yellowing, because people would just necessarily think brown.
Yes, and it needs to, I quite often will do a yellow with a drop of brown in,
yeah.
And then put the wood grain on the top of that with a darker brown
like a
still.
Wash.
Like a wash over the top. Oh, you're absolutely right.
Jackie Kelly gave me a good tip yesterday when we were talking about airbrushing and I was on stage. She said, if you want to practice airbrushing, buy a colouring book.
That's what I tell everybody.
Yeah, so I like
lesson,
that.
Yeah. So you buy a cheap children's colouring book.
Yeah.
And what you're learning how to do is if you can keep the piece of paper dry,
yeah.
Then you're not pulling back the trigger too much.
Yes.
And if you can learn to colour within the lines,
yeah.
Then your hand-eye coordination for where your airbrush is also then spot on.
Yeah.
Then you can actually learn how to colour something in.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Nothing. What I do quite a lot with stencils to make them look 3D is I start at 12 o'clock and I'm going to walk my way around to 8 o'clock.
Oh, I'm not going all the way around.
I'm not going all the way around. Right. And again, I'm concentrating on the stencil and not the other. Your brain fills in the gap, but of course you now end up with a highlight and there's your line. Stickers will not leave any residue behind. I've never sent them off to be tested to say, are they food safe? But I think it's only just because nobody has. But they're not going to leave any residue
behind.
Don't eat
them by accident.
Yeah, don't leave them on the cake. So if you're getting colour underneath, it's because you're not aiming at the right angle. So if this were the side of a cake, I'd have to be straight onto it,
yeah,
basically.
I would say, like, imagine a laser beam coming out the end of it.
Well, what I often...
Do you not make a laser beam then?
Yeah. Yeah, so you can see where you're pointing.
Like a one of cat laser pen.
Yeah, I rather like that idea.
There you go, you can have that.
What I actually imagine, and I say to people, is that I want you to imagine that you've got a pet dog and it's just come back from the vets, and it's got a cone on. If your dog turned its head left, the cone goes with it. If your dog turns its head right, the cone goes with it. That is what's happening inside of there. And that's why people can't know where to direct their spray, because they're not thinking about the cone. So if I use my index finger and point straight on, can you see how my airbrush is pointing straight?
Yeah.
If I was right-handed and point straight on, it's exactly the same, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what the problem is if I now use my thumb.
Mm.
So I'm now airbrushing, using my thumb, where's my airbrush pointing? Yeah. It's not straight at you anymore,
and,
is it?
And people often want to use the thumb.
Yeah, and that's why you don't.
Yeah.
You also don't have much control on your thumb as you do.
No, you don't. And you think you kind of would, but you don't. But look how it naturally will change the angle that I'm spraying at.
Little, so always index finger, and then you'll be aiming at the right place that you wanted to do. But if I remove the stickers...
Here we go, this is going to be nice.
But there we are, look.
Wow!
So how easy is it? I can see all of the cake boards, I can see...
Yeah, especially if you use a different colour paste than these.
Yeah, so there's also... And colour theory, look at colour theory. So if, for instance, I airbrush the whole sheet yellow first, and then I put my stickers on, and I airbrushed blue, I would actually get green,
yeah,
with yellow.
Yeah.
So I do, in a beginner class, I do some of these down on white surface, then I brush yellow, then I move the stickers, and then I airbrush blue,
yeah,
and you get blue spots, green surface, yellow spots, and white spots.
You can do like bubbles and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, so you can get all sorts. But actually, how easy is it to bring something together? And I don't know whether you can see, but this one, look, is not quite round. So that's where that sticker wasn't down properly.
Yeah.
And if it's not down, you've had it.
Yeah.
By the way, that tartan that's on there, that is completely airbrushed.
Wow. And is that using a sensor?
No. Masking tape.
Wow. And you know it's straight as well as the masking tape.
Well, the great thing is, so you know if I was doing a hat box cake and I just wanted like the stripes?
Yeah.
What I do is put a piece of masking tape down, I then put the next piece next to it.
Yeah.
I then put the next piece next to it, and then pull out the middle.
Okay, yeah,
and then
they're
equally spaced.
Yeah, nice.
Like,
yeah.
Basically. If I put that one there.
And obviously with the masking tape, it needs to be dried, doesn't it, the sugar paste?
Yes, yeah, so it needs to be an overnight thing, but it comes off straight away, so it's fine.
Later, I caught a lemon velvet and elderflower curd cake baking demo with Christine and Phil Jensen of Peborian, hosted by Karina McGuire. So here are some clips of their top baking tips. Don't worry about tracking any of the recipe details as you listen, because they've got their recipe on their website, and I'll link to that in the show notes.
So what we're doing here is I'm just doing a creaming method. So I'm creaming some sugar and some lovely butter, unsalted butter, and that's where we're going to start off. I'm going to add some eggs in there, and I need to weigh out the eggs.
Well, why do you weigh out the eggs, you crazy person?
I weigh out the eggs because that is the way Mary Berry does it. No. We weigh out the eggs because cake is science and cooking is an art form. And you can play about with spices and ingredients and seasoning levels. However, when you're doing cake, it just needs to be the same weight. So basically, eggs come in different sizes. Chickens can be happy or not. The ones with the wincy faces, they lay eggs at about 65 grams, and other chickens lay eggs.
Who look much more relaxed?
Who look much more relaxed. They weigh in at about 45 grams.
So
across a recipe, there's a huge difference. So one egg is not necessarily the same weight as the other egg. And so because of the inconsistency across the chicken laying community, we need to weigh the eggs.
Have you ever used those pasteurized cartons of...
Yeah, you can do, yeah. No, they're perfectly good.
And then that'd be the way out.
Yeah, so if you've got it in a pasteurized carton, you can literally just pour it out and get exactly the right measure. But it frustrates me when you read recipes and it says things like, use three eggs and one lemon. And I go down to the supermarket and one lemon is this size and the other one's the size of a small rugby ball. You think, it just doesn't weigh up. So it's all about precision. Good baking is all about precision.
But I once asked my mother-in-law for a recipe and she was saying there's a cut of this and a pinch of that. And there's no science in it whatsoever.
Yeah,
I know. How is it going to turn out? Yeah, I have no idea. What is a cut?
Different every time.
Yeah.
So I'm mixing up the eggs and the butter and sugar, just a little bit at a time. I'm hoping it's not going to split. There is a little trick that you can do in terms of assisting it not to split, in that you can actually lift out the yolks first and put the yolks in because they have a lower water content, and then add in the liquid later along with a little bit of flour, and that way you can avoid that.
Either way,
it's still going to be delicious.
So we're going to be making an elderflower curd. So when you're thinking about cake, the fillings are super important because it's like, with sandwiches. If somebody says that was a great sandwich, they rarely say the bread was amazing. What they're really talking about is, the bacon and the chicken and the mayo. It's all about the filling.
Boy, the beetroot and the lettuce and the... How
promise.
That is not a proper sandwich. Hummus and a sandwich.
Just saying, it's inclusive. No, we need to love the vegans in the room.
Well, we can love the vegans in the room, but it's got to have bacon. Apart from the cakes, cakes don't need to have bacon, just to be clear on that. So it's all about filling. So there are lots of different ways that you can bring extra flavour to your fillings, and curds are a fantastic way of doing that. So we're going to do elderflower curd. You can do, obviously lemon curd, orange curd, passion fruit curd is amazing. So they are fantastic. And what you can do is you can fold them into your buttercream, which is what we'll do today. You can spread them on your cake just to get that extra bit of punch.
And they soak right in, oh my goodness. So you can actually be super generous with your cakes. I would always try, bake your cake for yourself first.
So what exactly makes it a velvet then? Or what's the part?
It's the buttermilk in it.
The
red velvet has got chocolate as well.
Yeah.
But it's the buttermilk sort of yogurty component to it that makes it a velvet cake, yeah.
But this is a recipe that we use a lot in our sculpted cakes, so it's very popular.
It's a firmer one, is it?
It's not, and so that's what I was going to say. So ordinarily, there are competing needs when you're
making... Do you want me to stir this while you talk?
You can, yeah. Okay, thanks, cheers. Sculpted cakes can taste rubbish because you make them out of really stiff sponge or really firm sponge.
Like Madeira.
Or you skimp on the filling because you want it to be more stable. And so what we try to do is not compromise on flavour, don't compromise on cake. It just requires a little bit of extra thought when you're putting the cake together. So we have a good sort of centimetre of our buttercream in our cakes. It's not very sweet, so you can get away with it. You know, a centimetre of traditional British buttercream would make your teeth scream as you ate it. The buttercream that we're going to show you is really low in sugar, but we want to be very generous with that filling because that's where the great flavour is going to come from. And so if you do sculpted cakes, you don't need to compromise on flavour. It's all about sculpting it to the right shape, knowing where you need to put the ganache barrier to hold all the lovely filling in. You can do it, and I think one of the things that amuses me whenever anybody tastes one of our sculpted cakes is when they say, oh, it tastes really nice.
Yeah, and they're actually surprised.
Yeah, that's a shock.
I was expecting it to look good and taste good.
I'm thinking something more like styrofoam or cardboard. Because that's the expectation that they have. So it's lovely to be able to surprise people.
So what I'm using here is a shallow sandwich tin. We bake our cakes quite shallow. It gives it an even heat across the top. Not so much doming, so not so much to carve off, and then we layer it up that way. Rather than baking a deep cake for a very long period of time with the outside getting less and less dry and then having to cut it into little bits. So the reason that we don't do the edges is because life is short, one, and two, when the cake comes out of the oven, it needs a little bit of support, and this slight amount of stickiness that you get actually helps it to set with straight sides. If it has greaseproof paper on the sides, what it does is it goes like that, and it goes in a little bit. Yeah. And so actually you lose, there's a lot more ganache that you have to put on it, and so the eating of those corner or the edge ones are quite thick and sticky and very, very sweet. So you don't need to do the edges, and then also when we're washing it, don't put it in the dishwasher. It develops its own sort of baking patina, and it helps it release itself.
So is this like one of your most popular cakes that people would be...
Yeah, lemon and elderflowers, really, really popular. So we served this to Prince Charles.
We did.
Camilla?
Name drop.
Did you?
Yeah, she dropped that name.
You can fit that into any conversation,
yeah, she certainly can. Every single one. Right?
It was just before Harry and Meghan got engaged. And
good old friends.
Yeah. And so when the Daily Mail went searching for lemon and elderflower, because obviously, Harry and Meghan had a lemon and elderflower cake.
Yes, yeah.
The Daily Mail, obviously, it popped up that we had made lemon and elderflower for Prince Charles. So the Daily Mail printed that the idea for the lemon and elderflower had come from us.
They stole it from us.
And because the Daily Mail printed it, it's true, right?
Yeah. Absolutely true.
God. So we're just owning that. Yeah, we were the inspiration.
I would like to.
Yes.
I cannot deny
it. It's the closest I'm ever going to come to any kind of foil cake. So,
So yeah, there we go. This is how we make most of our cakes. So this is the basic form of the buttercream that we make for all of our classic buttercreams. This is the basis for that. And then, obviously, as Phil said, you just need to throw as much flavour in there as is humanly possible, and then you get some amazing concoctions. It's worth developing recipes. It's worth baking things once, twice, three times, four times. There was once that we did a 9-time bake because we just weren't happy with the end result. And I just think those kind of bakes are worth doing because when you get it right, it absolutely sings, and your clients will come back again and again and again and again for that. And your family and your friends will love you more. That's all I'm saying. I've been talking to a lot of people today about confidence in baking and confidence in caking. And I think there's something about just practicing and then being really happy and actually believing when people say that was delicious. Like, people don't say stuff like that. Unless they actually mean it. Like, if you're writing a review of a pair of shoes that you bought online, you're not going to say, oh, they fit really, really well, and I'm really, really happy with them, if they didn't. You're just either not going to say anything and be British, or you're going to say, they were amazing. And if you're saying that, then, like, you actually believe it. And so I think sometimes we forget to hear the good stuff that people say about what we do.
Accept a compliment.
Just listen to them. Listen to what they're saying. And accept the compliment. And if there's work to be done, just practice, practice, practice. There's nothing like practice to make you better. And going to a local college, like that's what I did. Went to the local college, did my pastry, pastry and confectionery. And there are courses out there, and the government helps you with some stuff, especially if you're a certain age.
Night school and all the rest.
Night school, all of that. It's worth doing because it gives you that sort of sense of confidence. In it. If you're doing it as a hobby, then just love your people. Thank you for them.
And then I caught Prachi Dabal Deb's demo on making your own embosser using royal icing on an acrylic plate, plus tips on piping royal icing later painted with gold.
Yeah, so today I'll be showing them how to pipe an Indian motif design.
Okay.
How to pipe it directly onto the cake, because a lot of people use stencils. You know, but the problem with stencil is the designs are very repetitive, you know. You can see any other cake artist using the same kind of stencil. So what I do is I sort of prepare my own stencils.
Very good.
So, and they last for a very long time. You can just store them. So any sort of pattern that you like, you can use an acrylic board and place it on top of the image. And you can use royal icing to pipe, to trace the design, and once it is dried, serves as a good stencil, embossers rather.
And so you have to do it as soon as it's iced, really?
Yes,
so
yes.
You get the impression.
Yeah, okay. The fondant should be fresh,
okay.
Like half an hour, one
very
hour.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent.
So once the pattern is embossed, it's so much easier, you know. Many people attempt it freehand, which I don't advise. Because when you have patterns right next to each other, I think piping freehand is not a good idea.
You'll always be able to tell, yeah.
So I don't like using a white color royal icing when I want to pipe it to gold. So slight yellow color works really like well.
Just in case anybody.
Just in case, yeah, a few spaces are left here and there, so it won't show up. So after the piping is done, I normally let it rest for an hour or so. So that the crust and everything is nicely formed, and then only I start painting.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, so I've done that I was too hasty, and then I just,
yeah,
you know,
smearing
it.
Yeah,
I did, so.
On Sunday morning, I had a chat with Isabel Tamargo and Val Seitz about how their show was going, the Cake Masters Awards from the night before, and how differences in pastes and preferences are handled in our industry.
Hi, Isabel. How are you?
How are you? I'm fine, and you?
How's your show been?
Great, great. I mean, I was really calm this year. I didn't get many things, so I just had two demos and one workshop for 2 hours. And the rest of the time I was just chatting and, you know, talking, walking. But it's great. It was a great fair.
I was easier on myself because I didn't compete.
I wouldn't do it either because, you know, it's too much stress, I think. And we come here just to have fun, to meet people. Finally, you know, we are chatting many times on Facebook, but finally to have a chat, to be with them, have dinner. So I think it's the most important, you know, to enjoy the hobby.
Okay, so tell me what you're making here, what you've been demoing today, the eyeball.
It's supposed
thing.
To be a Popeye. Yeah, but I have some problems with the isomalt because of the weather. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, because
so
of course I live in Spain, so everything was great before, and then I traveled and I had a problem. But I tried to fix it, and I think it's pretty okay. So right now I'm painting it, and I need to make the head, and the pipe is here, but I need to paint it still.
Because the eye
for him, because he's, right now he's not okay.
That's okay. I mean, this is one of the things I say on the podcast, that the midpoint of any project looks like hell.
Yeah. And even more with the sculpting.
Yeah.
Because when you start a flower, you know, and you make just two rows, oh, looks cute, looks beautiful. But when you make a sculpting, it's not like this. You know, you have to wait till you finish it completely and have it painted. So, yeah, that's why.
Yeah. Humans never look human halfway through. Animals are never looking like the right animal.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, wait, I'm making a dog. Why does it look like a panther? Until you're done. And then, voila.
Yeah. That's why I'm embarrassed many times when I'm working, because I just want to show the piece when it's completely done.
Yeah.
And when I have to demo, you know, be demoing and all that, you know, I just want to hide. Because I see the mistakes, and I said, just wait a little bit, because, you know, finally we'll be okay. But, you know, some people don't make what I make.
The brushes.
Yeah, the brushes. Thank you. They are too big, but yeah.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Yeah.
Hi, Val.
Hi.
How are you doing?
How's your show been?
Last night.
Well, the whole thing.
The show was great, but the last night, I have no words for that. If I would have something to say in this world, I would love to have people being recognized by their talent and not by what they, you know, if they're belonging to any group.
Yeah, the
working for
things.
Sarantino, working for a ranch show, working for this and that. It's not about that.
Yeah.
It's not about that. Where is the talent? People working hard, spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I'm glad because Jennifer Holst,
yeah,
she has no sponsors, but she has the talent. And she was one of those, Emma Jane as well,
that
made me really happy to see that they, you know, they won and it was deserved.
Yeah.
Deserved.
Yeah. I mean, Emma Jane is just...
Emma is such a nice and humble person.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
She's not nose up. She's normal. She's, you know, just cute and sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was happy I jumped when she, you know, when she was there. I said, yes, deserved.
Yeah.
Deserved.
Yeah.
And the same in Jennifer, because with Jennifer, you don't hear nothing about her. She's not that big. She's not trying to be big, but she has that skill.
Yeah.
She has that talent. She's doing many different things. So they said, okay, I love to work with Magic Colors. Not because of Magic Colors, not because of being big, not because of having a name, but because Lihi is such a beautiful person inside and out.
Yeah, yeah.
That you just do it, you know, you just do it because you believe in them.
Yeah.
You trust them. First of all, you trust them because you can trust that many people. So she's, and we go there and work with hard.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any sponsors,
so
but I have products that I love that I basically totally talk about all the time.
Exactly.
Like, I just had Mary Carmen on from Satin Ice, and I'm like, I love it. It's my favorite button. It's really hard to get here, but I mean, I love it. So if they sponsored me, everything I said about them would be genuine. No, I also use Renshaw. I also use
That's what I'm saying. You have to speak it out.
Yeah.
If you don't like something, you don't like it.
Yeah.
I was complaining about their colors also.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And in public, if people like it, people buy it. It's their...
Yeah, because it depends on what you're
We're all different, and we're all different. I don't like everything that you like. But on the other side, I'm honest with that. If the product is not that good, I'm going to say if the product is good. It doesn't matter that I'm with Magic Colors. If they have something that I don't like, I'm going to speak it up.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I respect. You've been posting. Okay, tell me about the new flower paste you've been using that stays flexible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been posting about it, and it looks amazing.
It is. It is not amazing because I made my flowers for the collaboration for ours, for Love Is. And what happened? I didn't make the pictures right away.
Okay.
So it was raining for 2 days, and my flowers were like used tissues. But the other one which I worked with is my Athena paste.
Right.
The flexible one.
Yeah.
Which I took for my wedding flowers.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's great to work with. It's really great, but if you mix it with another paste. So what I'm doing, if I want something flexible but still stable, not to fall down after rain, I take the new one from Magic Colors.
Right, yes.
Because it's not sticky and my Athena
That's
is not...
That's what I meant, the new Magic Colors.
Yeah, one. It's great. Yeah. It's great. What I like about Magic Colors the most is that it's not sticky.
Yeah, right.
I hate paste being sticky, having them on my fingers like this, you know.
Yeah.
It's really, I hate that.
It wrecks everything you touch.
Hate it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I tested, we got something last night at the awards. It was some flower paste. It's sticky as hell. I don't even know the name. It doesn't have a name, I think.
The flower paste. I think that's
what
it's called.
But yeah. I don't know what it is.
Because it's going, and look at my partner to the sugar paste.
Yeah, but that's what it is.
I haven't even opened mine yet,
so
yeah.
I did open it to test it right away, but as many others, sticky and... can do much.
Well, and the humidity doesn't help today either. But then if you need to know that, because if you're going to make flowers on a humid day, especially in England.
Yeah, so like I said, Magic Colors is not perfect, but it's good enough to be happy with it, to work with it.
Yeah, and if you feel like they listen to you, because that's, again, the brand, my favorite brands are the ones where I know if I come and say, this hasn't worked. I love Innovative Sugar Works.
Yeah.
Because if you go to Megan and say, this didn't work for me, they're usually the answer is, we know we're already improving that. Thank you for telling us. Sometimes the answer is, do you want a replacement?
I love people who are listening.
Yeah, it's when you feel listened to by a brand. I mean, I've used Saratina because I've had the free samples, and I'm like, that's really nice. And then I look at the price, and I'm like, no one's paying me.
Yeah.
If someone was paying me, I would buy this stuff. Like, if I was getting paid, because it's so
expensive.
Lovely. But,
they're expensive.
So I just every time I get
it. I like the flower paste from Saratina, but I can't make glasses with it. It dries too fast.
Yeah, I found a bit, yes. Some
it
of
dries too fast, and you can't work with people, beginners, with, you know.
No.
But for me, it's good.
See, there again, that's why the Satin Ice came out with a gum paste, by love. But it costs a fortune here. So I have...
Oh, of course, they get it from the... Yeah.
So, like, anytime anyone sends me some or brings me some...
You're happy.
Visiting, then, yeah, because I'm not going to pay that price. We have a contest going right now. I should actually say that on this podcast. Nobody has entered our contest. We're doing another... I put these on the podcast. I say, all you have to do is this,
okay,
and then you can win. Nobody has entered our Satin Ice contest.
Why?
We don't know. I think because people listen to the podcast while they're working, and they forget to go. Whereas if you're reading a blog, and it says, do this, you do this. So all people have to do is post on either Facebook or Instagram, tag me and or Mary Carmen, and set hashtag, I want that Satin Ice. And they can get 3 5-pound buckets of Satin Ice.
Okay.
For free.
Wherever they live, or just in the States?
Yeah. Sorry?
Just in the States or
no,
wherever?
She said she'll ship worldwide.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
And she's like, we get hundreds of entries. I'm like, no, we haven't. Her episode was a month ago. Not one entry yet.
So as mentioned there, as far as I can tell, nobody has entered this giveaway. And as of recording this on Thursday, November 21st, I still can't see any entries on either Facebook or Instagram. I've searched my notifications, and I've searched for the hashtag, and the only people using the hashtag are Mary Carmen and I. So if you have posted it, you haven't made sure that I can see it. And if you haven't posted anything, why not? There's still time! You have until the end of November to post on either Facebook or Instagram, tagging both me and Mary Carmen, to make sure we see it, and to use the hashtag, I want that satin ice. Mary Carmen will send the winner 3 5-pound buckets of satin ice anywhere in the world. Full terms are available in the show notes for her episode, and that'll be linked in the show notes. Anyway, for the rest of Sunday at Cake International, I went and looked at entries, and my favorite ones can be seen in photos in the show notes as well. I also did a small amount of shopping, including going over to the craft show that the Cake International ticket also gets you into, and over there I found a bunch of discounted clear stamps. I had no luck finding an empty ink pad that I could fill with food color gel, which is so weird because I know that kind of thing is readily available in the US, and I haven't been able to find one here in the UK. All of the stamp sellers I talked to were weirded out by the question until I explained to them that I want to be able to stamp on cookies with food coloring. And then they'd shrug and say that sounded like a great idea, but they'd never heard of an uninked pad. That is, until I finally found one seller who has been in the business for decades, and she said she hasn't seen one here in ages. She helped me find one online later, but even there, it's the American one imported. It's sitting in my Amazon cart, so I haven't actually ordered it to try it yet, but when I do, I'm going to write a blog post about it and compare it to the other things I've tried, like plain upholstery foam, which was mediocre, paper towels, which were worse, and the little PME stamping stick thing. I don't even know what it's called, and I don't even think they sell them anymore. Anyway, the next time I need to stamp some cookies, I'll whip up a blog post along with it, especially if I use the lovely thank you stamp I bought from that nice lady who helped me out. But back to CI, the next demo I went to was a beginner's guide to painting with cocoa butter with Tracy Mann, hosted by Ben Fullard. So here are some top clips from her talk.
So what I'm basically going to do is show you some tips and hints on doing cocoa butter painting. So if this is something that you're thinking about doing in the future, then hopefully I can show you some basic ideas and some things that you can look at and something that you can get into. Something like cocoa butter painting can be quite daunting. You know, people, oh, I can't paint is what I get on my stand a lot, and I can't draw either. Well, I've set up a system, an online system, where you can not be able to paint or draw and get to this stage. So everyone then laughs and goes, no chance. Well, I have got students that have managed it. So please just, it's more about sort of having confidence and understanding this to be able to then go on and do your own paint. So I'm going to talk through a few, some of the things that I do, some of the equipment that I use, and then hopefully by the end of it, if you want to come around and talk to me, I'm on B6, which is next door to the paintbrushes on the corner there, so I'm literally just round the corner. So cocoa butter is the product that we use. So this is cocoa butter painting. This isn't painting with vodka or anything classed as an edible paint. So this is painting with cocoa butter, which is a product that we're going to melt down, and we're going to mix it with dusting colours. So dusting colours which are not water-based is what we would add to the melted cocoa butter. So we don't use gels and we don't use pastes, we use dusting colours only, so edible dusting colours plus cocoa butter. And I'm going to show you the system that I use to paint so that you can understand kind of how that works. There are a couple of ways that you can use cocoa butter and do cocoa butter painting. This is the way I do it, but I'm going to tell you both ways, and then you probably will already be able to do the other way first. This just costs a little bit of money to set it up, but I'll talk it through anyway. So at home, if you've got a glass bowl, a shallow glass bowl, and a plastic paint palette, if you fill your glass bowl with boiling water and pop your plastic version of this on top, the steam will come up from underneath from the bowl to the paint palette and heat it up. That's what melts the cocoa butter. And it's a fine, and it's nothing wrong with that method at all. You can use a plate as well, no problem with that at all. However, every 20 minutes you are going to have to boil the kettle again and refill it and get it back up again. So you're mid-paint and suddenly everything is becoming much more difficult to paint, is because your water's gone cold and the cocoa butter is starting to get thicker. Now, this is a chrome food warmer, which I've managed to get off Amazon for about £10, and it is the best thing ever. So it's got a tea light in the bottom of it, which I'm now going to light. I've also got one of these. Now, this is a metal paint palette, so I'm going to put that on top, and it gets really hot. So if you go and touch it or go to move it, you will know about it, because it does get really, really hot. But what it's doing is keeping everything warm so that my cocoa butter will remain melted the whole time. So I'm going to add in some cocoa butter now, and I'm literally going to put in about that much. That's four little buttons.
So it really does go a long way.
Goes a long way. This is one of the lowest cost things to do in terms of equipment. You can see just about that the cocoa butter here is starting to melt. If I move these around, you'll see that they're now turning to liquid. So they do turn to liquid quite quickly. Opposite side of here, I've put some white dusting colour. The brands I tend to use, now I don't tend to be too brand specific, but because I'm old, it's been a while, I know Sugar Flare brand really well, because I've been cake decorating for over 30 years, so I tend to know what these colours do, so hence I go back to them. So this is the brand that I use. I do use some rainbow dust, and I do use an edible art one as well that I'm particularly keen on called Biscuit. They're just straightforward Sugar Flare colours. If you live abroad and you can't get them, brown is brown. If it's, you know, you can just adapt. So you don't have to stick to these particularly. These are just the ones that I tend to use. So I'm going to just put in a little bit of black as well, hopefully not too much. And that's the other thing as well, you don't use very much. You use tiny amounts of dusting colour to do this. I'm trying not to spill it because it goes absolutely
everywhere.
I'm always
really tight with my dust. Always really sparing on you.
They do go a long way. I get through more white than I get through anything else, but generally they do go an awful long way. So you can see the cocoa butter's now melted. As long as that flame doesn't go out, then the cocoa butter will stay melted. What I'm going to show you now is what cocoa butter does with consistency in terms of understanding it. Because if you understand how it works, then you will be able to paint. And that's one of the biggest things about this is the technique and the understanding of it. So everything about this is about consistency. So the more it's about ratios. So any of you that used to go to school years and years, ago, back in the 70s like me, if you had something like powder paint, you would mix it with water. So the more water you add into the powder paint, the more translucent your paint is. Well, this is the same thing. I'm going to show you what I mean. So if I take my paintbrush and I dip it into the cocoa butter and I take it out, move it across to the dusting colours, pick up a few grains, and then I mix it on the side. If I then take that and then I paint that onto this dried sugar paste, you'll see it's grey, translucent. It's very, very clear. It's not black, but it is black.
It's kind of like a watercolour, isn't it?
Yes, painting more like watercolour at the moment because I have got a lot of cocoa butter in there versus the powder. So when you come to mix this, don't be tempted to take your cocoa butter and then mix in all your dusting colour. I tend to mix on the side so that I can adjust my consistencies as I go. So if I do that again, and if I put my brush in again, but this time if I just wipe off a couple of dabs of the cocoa butter, go back to my colour. So now I've taken the cocoa butter back a bit and increased my powder, so you can now see that it's gone a little bit closer to black. So we're starting to head in the right direction of the colour that we're looking for. So when we then go to black, we're going to dip the paintbrush in the cocoa butter, take off as much cocoa butter as we can, go across to the black, mix it, and then when I put it down, it's going to be black. Now, in terms of it drying, cocoa butter dries really quickly, but not in the summer. In the summer, when it's hot, it's a pain, it takes forever to dry. But the stuff I dried a minute ago is now dry. So it takes 1 to 2 minutes for cocoa butter to dry, so it's really quite quick. So if you put your hand on it, turn it over, that's still wet at the moment, but I know if I leave it, it's quite warm under these lights, but everything is still drying at quite a reasonable pace. In 45 minutes, I cannot paint this from start to finish. I will be a miracle worker. It does take a good 2-3 hours to do something like this. Now, someone said to me the other day, oh, I'm a cake maker, it can't be, you know, financially good for me to do this. But I said, well, how long did it take you to do the ruffles around that cake? And they went, oh yeah. And when you take a step back and think of some of the other techniques that you're offering onto a cake, then suddenly this doesn't seem as expensive. It suddenly makes a bit more sense because you're thinking, well, that took me 3 hours. How long is it going to take you to do ruffles all around this cake? Probably longer, 4 or 5. And the other thing is, as well, lots of cake decorators. I've said to them, look, if you live in an area where there are a lot of cake decorators, and there are a lot of cake decorators in most areas, if you can start offering something else, like painting pet portraits onto cakes, you will do very well. Now, if that sheer thought sends you into meltdown, because you think, oh, I'm not going to get this right, do it on a plaque. Do it on a plaque, put it on a cake, take it off, okay? So, and actually, the person who's then going to receive it will be thrilled because they won't want to cut into their beloved pet. They can remove the plaque, put it down and go, I've got a picture of my cat or dog, so that's what we want. When we do our painting over there, a lot of our projects are actually based on, this is actually one of my students' dogs. It's her dog picture that we painted. So we look for pictures that are really good and in the right position. So any animal that's looking straight down the lens of a camera is going to be difficult for you to paint. Because of perspective. You need an animal that is looking slightly to the left, not huge amounts. This cat here is literally turning very slightly to the left or right, it doesn't matter, but they're not looking straight down the camera. You're gonna make it a lot more difficult for yourself if you've got one that is like that. Now, for the bit where everyone goes, but I can't draw that, that looks completely impossible, the next thing we're going to do is cut it out with a pair of scissors. That sounds like a good plan, doesn't it? So we're going to cut it out with a pair of scissors, And then we're going to get hold of a knife and we're going to cut out drastic things like his eyes and things like that so that we're able to set them into position. So I'll show you what that looks like on a plaque. And when you first start with this, you think there is no way on this earth that this cat will ever look like it did at the start. Because if you had that in front of you, you would be horrified. Because it does look really like, where do I go from here? But that's your outline. It's all there for you. We've transferred the image, this image, onto here. And now we've got this base to work on. Now, if anyone does any painting, so if anyone is a natural painter anyway, this is like painting with acrylic. So we build layers. So we let the cocoa butter dry, we build another layer. We let the cocoa butter dry and we build another layer. And when you look at an animal or animal fur, they do tend to be different layers of colour. Even if you look at a black dog tends to be layers of dark, shades of grey, basically. So you are from dark grey, mid-grey, light grey, through right through to black. We've got a dog that we do on the first lesson, which is a black and white dog. And he's made up of almost all shades of grey until the very final bit. And then we put the bits of black in. So when someone sent me a picture when they first started, I want to do my black dog, you visions are, oh, it's black, I do all black, where you will have no depth to it. So it's about looking at things and working out the colour shading. And that's the other really important thing about painting. Paint what you see, not what you think. Because the thing is, you go, yes, I know it looks like that. And then you look down and go, there's something wrong with this. And then when you look at the picture and realise that your brain has taken over, you realise you've painted all the wrong stuff. So it's about taking a step back and looking and being very observant of what you're doing. So this is stage one of the animal painting. We've got an outline going around here, and we've painted in a basic eye shape. So that's where we are to start with before we then move on to this stage. That is where we've taken our picture, and I've made some slits into the picture with a knife, popped it on, used my paintbrush, peeled it back, and I've got the exact markings where that animal is. I know where his chin is. I know where his mouth is, I know where his nose and his eyes are. I've not just looked at my picture and gone, roughly there. I've actually planned it. I have marked it all on carefully. So this is our third stage. This is where we start to build up our fur. And one of the things when you do animal painting that you need to look at is fur direction, because it's so easy to literally go and go across like that. And we painted lines. Now, animal fur goes like that. It also can go like that, and it can go like that as well. So looking at your picture, you can start to look at where it's going, and it's being very observant about it. Now, the other thing I'm going to need on standby is a dry paintbrush. I need a fluffy paintbrush that's got nothing on it, okay? The reason I need that is because with animal hair, you want to keep it nice and soft. So we don't want to end up with thick lines. And if you make a mistake, you can whip it off quickly with this brush. So this brush hasn't been in anything. It's not been in any cocoa butter. It's not been in any water. It's just dry and a bit fluffy. So that's what we're looking for. Now, with the dry brushing, if you paint something and then you leave it to dry, the dry brushing won't work. But the other thing with it as well is if you do it straight away, especially beginners, they press too hard and they just whip the whole lot off. So you'll be busy doing all your fur, you'll go out with your dry brush and look down, everything's gone. So there's a very fine line with this, but it takes you to do it, to understand it. So the best way to kind of do this is literally get in there and have a go on some sugar paste, try it, dry brush it, see how it works, and then you'll be able to understand it. But it is the very, very light technique. It's almost lighter than putting on makeup if that's the kind of thing that you do.
How do you clean the brushes afterwards?
Okay, so you can do a couple of things. You can, because you want to try and keep your brushes nice, don't you? You don't really want loads of horrible brushes. The worst thing is to try and do them in cold water. So I do one of two things. Normally I take my paintbrush, put it in the cocoa butter, and I just roll it on some kitchen paper. So I dip it, roll it like that. Then I get some hot water, not necessarily boiling, a little bit of hot water and some washing up liquid, swill them all round, roll them on the kitchen paper, and then it's all clean. It's as simple as that. And if you've made a mistake or you've put your paintbrushes down and they've gone rock hard, which they will do if they've got cocoa butter in them, all is not lost. Again, just put them in some hot cocoa butter or some very hot water and they will disintegrate. Just don't leave your brushes standing in a pot like that, because then the next time you bring them out, they're all going to be at a strange angle and you won't be able to paint them again. It's about making sure you leave them flat.
And at the end of the day, I went to Ben Fullard's demonstration on modern wedding cake techniques, starting with tips on how to do a realistic birch bark effect, followed by a concrete look. He began by making the birch bark tree shape around the cake in sugar paste, complete with the look of broken off branches and knots, and then showed how he makes the particular papery quality of the birch.
A lot of people think it's like two layers stuck on top of each other, but actually I just sort of slice thin layers off the cake. You can use a sharp knife, but I find it easier to use a Stanley blade, because it's much finer, thinner, so you find that you're naturally a little bit more careful and delicate when you work with it. And all I will do, as thin as possibly, is literally imagine like you're trying to sort of shave the cake rather than anything. And all I'll do is just gradually run that as thin. You want to keep it as thin as possible. If it's too thick, it kind of looks artificial. You can highlight them with a little bit of white, which does give you that illusion that it's thinner than it is as well. And then you can just fold that back and you can manipulate it, open it up a bit more. So already that starts to create the illusion of the peeling bark. And then on the sides as well, just gently, it's quite irregular on the natural tree. I'm a bit of a tree hugger. I've got so many pictures of trees on my iPad. You'd be like, why? But it's amazing when you want to really create something that's detailed, or if you're trying to enter a competition and fool everyone in an illusion category or something, for example, the more little details you can get in, the better. So we'll just do quite effective at the top. Again, it doesn't matter, I've overcut that one, it'll fall off. Doesn't really matter, it's still a nice texture. Tree bark isn't perfect. Then normally, I would leave that for half a day or sort of overnight to dry, so that when you paint it, you're not just basically pushing everything back together. So I'll try my best today, but normally that would have a bit more time to sort of crisp up a bit. Now for a bit of colour, basically I'm using dust and I'm going to mix it with, you can use lemon extract. This is alcoholic, so it actually evaporates quicker, so it doesn't dissolve the sugar underneath, basically. It's probably the easiest way to put it. Same as the dipping solution, or isopropyl alcohol, whatever you want to call it. So, colour. First of all, I'm just going to give the whole thing a very, very pale sort of brown wash. I've got a bit of latte brown. Usually, something with a lot of detail is always going to be the front or at the side. So if you test it on the back, gently, I'm quite happy with that as a sort of beginning stage. And it can, and unevenly, you don't want a solid coat. So just gently sort of brush on, brush off, work your way around. And gradually then, all those little textures and lines you put in before just start to appear, and start to come to life. And then where we've got the V's and the tears, just to highlight them even more, we'll just go darker with the colour. If you wanted to add a little bit of black to it, you can. Or a different shade of brown. Again, if you've got a tree in the garden or something, look closely at it, but very rare trees are actually brown. They're more of a sort of grey colour, green, so mix all of those together. So the concrete, this is a good way of using up some of your old bits of paste. So it's one of my most popular textures at the moment. If the bride's not sort of brave enough to have all four tiers, quite often I'll have alternate tiers or maybe just one large focal tier and then with some sort of plain and white iced cakes on it. To create the effect, the day before you want to cover your cake, I'll colour some paste in a sort of palish version of what I want it to be. So I've got a pale grey here and I'll leave it out overnight in sections and let it dry. So again, which is exactly unnatural, isn't it? You want perfect, smooth, nice, elastic paste. So you're trying not to create that. So leave that overnight, like I said. And then the day after, I'll introduce some white to it. A little bit of black. Flour paste works well as well, because flour paste dries at to a different consistency and at a different time. it creates a different effect. So while one of your pastes is still quite stretchy and elasticy, the flour paste stays in little pieces. So again, it adds those little sort of bits of grit that you'd naturally find in concrete or stone. So this is black flour paste. I'm just going to drop some tiny little crumbs of that onto the paste. It's like making a mud pie. There's no right or wrong with marble. You kind of work with it until you like the effect you've got. So, and if you work it too much, you're then getting rid of all the cracks and all the natural sort of drying that it's had overnight. So we won't overdo this. You can also use like some of the large grain sugars as well that you can buy in different colours. So my go-to is probably the silver sugar, which you can sprinkle on at this stage as you're sort of rolling out your paste. So you'll see now already all those dry bits are naturally peeling. They're not sticking together. They're creating those layers and depths for you already. So my little trick, my background's I was a chef, so it's like the old creme brulee kind of method. So might look a bit scary, but it's a really safe thing to use, and the more you use it, the more familiar you are with it. So all I will do is literally go in and caramelise a small area of the sugar paste, and you're basically creating that rock hard sugar skin again. Give that some time to dry. Obviously, if you leave it on for long, it will burn and go black. You don't want that. I like leave it on long enough, you'll get some sort of brown colour. And those are the areas then later on I'll focus my gold highlights on. It's kind of like a background for the gold colour. If you're doing a cake that's white and you want it to look white and frosty, more Jack Frost winter, don't hold the blowtorch on for so long. So basically then you're creating the caramel skin still, but it's clear and it's white, and you can then add a white luster to it or something like that. So again, then when you roll this out, you automatically get that real sort of crystallised, uneven, irregular, concrete effect. And with this, it doesn't matter quite often. It will sort of tear as you're working with it, which again, defies everything we sort of work towards. But if you sort of overlap and blend the layers together and roll over it, it gives you a natural line to sort of follow with your gold pen or your gold highlighter to create those natural gaps. If you try and draw it on yourself, it will never look realistic or natural. So I always tend to, quite often it will tear as you're covering the cake anyway, but those natural tears, you can never create yourself. So just gently roll the paste back together, and each time you're building up these lovely layers.
So that's my Cake International episode for 2019. I hope you found some of the clipped tips useful. And of course, if you can ever make it to the show yourself, you'll get the whole talk plus all of the visuals. Be sure to head over to the show notes page, which you can find in the description of this podcast file, or just head over to eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. And while you're online, remember to enter the I Want That Sat Nice giveaway. Special extra shout out to my CMA gal pals. Can't wait for next year for more sausage and banana shenanigans. And I hope to see all of you at the show next year as well. This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors. And you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
forget cakes, I'm going into wrapping.